to remember that. That's what this is all about. Teresa is an author, syndicated Catholic talk show host, and motivational speaker with nearly 27 years of experience in communications as a talk show host, radio and TV newswoman, and newspaper columnist. We are so fortunate to have Teresa with us. Teresa left the secular media in 2000 to start her own speaking and communications company. She has a daily morning program called Catholic Connections, and which is produced by Ave Maria Radio, and has heard on over 120 Catholic stations through the EWTN global network. Teresa, she's also on Cyrus Satellite Radio, which is wonderful. Teresa is a columnist and special correspondent for the national Catholic newspaper, The Sunday Visitor, as well as a writer for the Zenit Catholic News Agency, which is one of the news agencies I love. She has also experienced frequently, she also appears frequently on EWTN Catholic Television, and has also been featured on the O'Reilly Factor and Fox News. Without further ado, Teresa Tomio.
Well, good morning, and thanks for coming into this session. I think in terms of the whole theme of the conference, we're really going to, as Molly said, encourage you to think about, you know, praying, voting, acting, and educating. But we can't do that without the media. We really need to engage the culture, and we need to do it not just through the Christian and the conservative media, but we need to be not afraid, as the late, great John Paul II said, of approaching and engaging the secular media. And that's pretty scary. And I know because I worked in it for so many years, and it can be very intimidating at times, but it's not impossible. And I loved Abby's approach to approaching this with love, in the sense that the people inside Planned Parenthood, as you've learned from her work, at least some of them, as she has explained in her work and her book, many of them do believe, as in the media, that they are doing the right thing. They have bought into this ideology, and they think they are the enlightened ones, and they just have to inform the rest of us. And if we would just listen to them, the world will be great. And they're thinking that they're doing this for the betterment of society. And so it's a very interesting mentality, and I was caught up in that for many years, and I called myself pro-choice. I don't even like to use that term anymore because it's so hypocritical. But what I'm going to do for you this morning is to really kind of walk you through, and I just want to remind you that if you're interested in really learning how to deal with the media one-on-one, how to do a talk show interview, how to do a television interview, then I would encourage you to think about coming to the Heartbeat International Conference in Columbus, and which is going to be their 40th anniversary conference, and doing a full day of media training, which is part of my business, what I do. Because I think part of the problem is that we are very good in terms of working with each other, and we're great at the March for Life, and we're great at a lot of things in the pro-life movement. We're not that great in dealing with the secular press, with the exception of the big speakers, like, for example, Star Parker is out there and some others. But we have to be out there engaging the local news media, the local news talk stations, the local newspapers. And I'm going to get into that. It's very, very important not to shy away from them, because you wouldn't believe how many people email me on a regular basis who are listening to EWTN, and I'm constantly talking about pro-life issues if you listen to my show, and it spans the gamut of discussion, not just on abortion, but on contraception, on end-of-life issues, on euthanasia, on, you know, the sick and caring for the sick and the elderly, and all those things that we say as a people of life, the death penalty. Although to me, it's in terms of abortion, that issue is the most important in the pro-life movement. But I get people emailing me, and they don't understand these are Catholics and other Christians who don't even understand the basics of biblical principles or church teaching on these things. And so that's why it's important, because they're getting most of their information not from me, unfortunately. They're still listening to the secular press. So they're not getting the truth. So that's why it's important for us. If we're going to get motivated and educated, we have to educate the masses, and we have to use part of the institution of the media. It's not all bad. There are some really bad people in it. I know I worked for a lot of them, but there's also some good people in it. All right, and for more information, I do have my book, Noise. This is my first book, and it's all about the media. All about the media, and I go through each individual area of the media, TV, radio, advertising, and how it affects families. And I also have a chapter on media bias called All the News is Fit to Twist, which is all about media bias and the history of it. And then the last chapter is how to engage the culture and how to be a media active family. Okay? So here's what we're going to look at today. I love these PowerPoints. They're so cool. I think I have a laser on here too, don't I? There should be. So I could wake you up if anybody falls asleep by this pointing at you. So here's our agenda for this morning. Take it from Teresa. I'm just going to do just a little mini testimony, just very short, just to give you a little bit about my journey. Molly mentioned it, but in terms of my turnaround, in terms of the faith, I just think it's important for you to know where I come from. Media bias basics, some of the research that I've done over the years. I speak on this across the country. I write books about it, and I do a lot with culture, especially with women and the lies that we bought into with contraception and that whole aspect of it. But there really is a solid history, unfortunately, of media bias, and there's survey after survey after survey to show how the media are thinking. So I'm just going to give you some statistics and a little bit of background on that. Then we're going to go over tools of the trade, do's and don'ts of media coverage. It's very important to know what to do, and it amazes me how many opportunities people have to be on the air and they don't realize it, or when they do have the opportunity to be on the air, they don't show up for an interview. Now, my show is now, I should update my flyer, my show is now syndicated within this last year on over 160 stations around the country. Now, to mention globally on EW10 and Sirius Satellite, so when you're on my show, you are being heard all over. You're being heard in Detroit, you're being heard in Philadelphia, you're being heard in Dallas, you're being heard in San Francisco, you're being heard in Washington, D.C. now we have Catholic radio. And it amazes me how many people don't take advantage of those opportunities. Okay, so I'm going to give you some tools of the trade. And then I'm going to talk about beware the open microphone. Some very simple tips for successfully presenting yourself on both radio and TV. And yeah, it does include, if you're going to be on TV, even guys, to use some makeup. And I'm going to explain that, okay? Very important how we present ourselves. And then we'll have some encouraging signs. There are some really good things that are happening out there. We are making a difference. I don't want to leave you with all bad news about the media. So I want to leave you with some encouraging signs, and then we'll also hopefully have time for question and answer. How many of you are familiar with the work of Bernard Goldberg? Former CBS News correspondent. That's a book I would highly recommend, his first book, Bias. He also recently wrote a book about the elections of 2008, which is very good. Now, he's a former CBS News correspondent who describes himself as a moderate, not super conservative, but he was really the first to come out, in addition to the Media Research Center and Brent Bozell's group, to really come out as a correspondent within the system on a national level and talk about the bias, the institutionalized bias. And here's one of the things he said. Instead of emanating from some central source, the bias is ingrained through the fabric of mainstream media from top to bottom. It's an institutional bias. The problem, in a word, is groupthink. They all think like the same. They think absolutely the same. They support abortion. They support same-sex marriage. They totally support contraception, sexual promiscuity. So they're all thinking alike. And when you're around people who think like that, then you think everybody in the world thinks like that. They're stunned. They were stunned, I think, last November with what happened. And they're always stunned when these issues come up. Like people, they don't think people care about these things, like marriage and, you know, marriage between a man and a woman. This is how they think. It's from the top on down. But again, it's this attitude of we're the enlightened ones. And they're trying to enlighten us as well. And trust me, I was in that for many, many years. All right. This is some pictures of me at the March for Life. I now cover it every year for EWTN Television, which is a huge thrill for me. And to be able to use my skills as a journalist, I've worked in a major market my whole life, and so I have a lot of TV news experience. I worked in live TV. I've anchored. I've done just about everything, radio news director. And if you would have told me 15, 16 years ago that I would be covering the March for Life for the Catholic Network, I would have told you, I don't know what you're smoking or drinking, but I want some of it, okay? Because I like to call myself a feminazi, former feminazi. I mean, I bought into the whole radical feminist movement. As I said, I called myself pro-choice. I was very liberal. I fell away from the faith in college. I only went to mass maybe the night before an exam when I needed help from God, you know, treating God as a slot machine. Oh, I promise, I'll just put in my tokens to go to mass. If you just let me pass this test, I'll continue to, you know, go to mass every week. And I just got sucked into the culture. I'm 51 years old, graduated from college in 77, you know, 4 years after Roe v. Wade. And it wasn't even so much about the abortion issue. It was just this mantra that was put out there in terms of abortion and rights and choice and choice and choice. And we just kind of all accepted it and got sucked in. And at the same time when I was growing up, I had a lot of success. The Good Sisters of St. Joseph, and I'm a cradle Catholic, when they first put a microphone in my hand when I was in the third grade because they said, we've got to do something with this Chatty Cathy. We just have to put this to use somehow. And so they put me on stage with a microphone to read a little poem, and after that I was hooked. I knew I was going into communications. And I had a lot of success at a very early age in high school. I was in debate and forensics. I worked on the high school radio station. I had 3 internships in college. I started working in a major market right after I graduated. I was on a mission. But then something started to happen. I met a wonderful man, got married, and thanks be to God, this year we'll be celebrating 29 years of marriage. And he, by the way, this is a breaking news story. He's going to be the only man canonized while he's still alive because he's been putting up for me for that long. But we had all the trappings of the world. We had success. I was on TV. We were making money. My husband was moving up in his engineering firm. But we were drifting apart. And it wasn't until a major crisis, till we came close to divorce and I lost one of my big jobs in TV news, that I really had to start to look at my life. And the scales started to fall off of my eyes when I eventually came back to the church and re-embraced my Catholic faith and then started looking around the newsroom and realizing, what the heck is going on? I noticed all this bias, which had been there for a very long time, but I noticed a real bias toward things like Promise Keepers. You know, when the Promise Keepers Convention would come to town, we used to have them at the Pontiac Silverdome almost every year in Detroit. And the media would be criticizing it. Meanwhile, the divorce rate is skyrocketing. You know, you've got families breaking up. Here you have men coming together to commit to their wives and their families, and the media are reporting it like it's a bad thing. And they would cover the 10 protesters outside as opposed to focusing on the 50,000 men that were gathered inside the Silverdome. So I started to see this, and also with the abortion movement. Whenever there was a story on abortion, they would make sure we always would try to get the pro-abortion side, but they weren't worried at all about getting the pro-life side. You're at least supposed to attempt objectivity. There's no such thing as true objectivity because we're human beings and we bring a lot of stuff to the table. So if anybody tells you in news that they're totally objective, they're lying right through their teeth because it's just physically impossible. It's impossible. You come to a newsroom with who you are. You bring all that baggage. And I would see the stories change depending on what the executive producer was going through in her life that month or that year. If she was having a problem at home, she'd do something on, you know, well, how do I take care of my kids? Let's do something on daycare. We had another producer who was building a house. All of a sudden, we're doing all these stories on remodeling. And that's fine. Because it's a great way to come together and have this melting pot, supposedly, of ideas. But the problem is, as Goldberg said, when you don't, nobody thinks differently about anything, that's going to be just a very, very myopic, you know, view of things. And that's what has happened in the business. So what happened to me is in 2000, my last job is as a radio news director, and I had a hard time saying, okay, do I want to leave this limelight? Because let's face it, I was making really good money in Detroit. It was a big market. I was a news director. I still had the clout, even though I was back in the church. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I had known nothing since I was 14 years old but being on the radio and doing news. And so I really took a leap of faith and said, okay, Lord, I'm just going to leave because I'm not comfortable making a living at this anymore, and I'm going to trust that you're going to direct me. I knew I had to speak out about what I was seeing, not just in the news media, but in the overall programming of radio and TV and the music and all these things that were affecting people. And so I left in 2000. I started my own communications company and really built the company financially by doing media training, which helped me at least get some income, and then continued to do research on media influence, and I was blown away by the studies. Because, see, I'm a reporter, I'm a journalist, and I'm all about facts. Give me the facts. That's what I love about the Catholic Church. This is why I'm remained Catholic, because you go back to all the teachings, and it's like Professor George said yesterday, it all makes sense. The truth comes out. Truth is revealed in all kinds of different ways, but it always goes back to the basic truth of that dignity of the human person over and over again, whether it's stem cell research, whether it's abortion, whether it's euthanasia. And so I'm all about facts. I want to give people the proof that it's not just some, you know, crazy burnt-out reporter telling you this stuff, even though I've lived through it as a secular journalist, but the information out there to show a correlation between what's put out there in society every day through all the various media outlets that we have now and what's happening in our culture. Now, I'm not saying you blame the media for everything and it's all the media's fault. But it would be really ignorant for someone to try to claim that the media don't have an influence. How did you find out about this conference? Through the media. All right. So that is a little bit of my story. And I started speaking in 2000. I first worked at an evangelical station for 2 years, and I was hired by Ave Maria Radio. And my show was syndicated in 2005, and now I'm all over the country speaking on this issue. And again, as I said, if you would have told me this 15 or 20 years ago, I would have told you, as I said, that you are a few sandwiches short of a picnic, because this is not what I intended to do with my life. But you know what? Isn't it funny? When you take that step for God, I've never been happier, I've never had more fun, and I've never been more fulfilled. I've won so many awards. You know, I have degrees in journalism and blah, blah. I don't even know where all those things are. My office at home looks like a Catholic bookstore. With the exception of, and St. Dominic's in there too. As in St. Dominic, my husband, not St. Dominic Salvio, but St. Dominic, my husband. All right. So let's take a look at media bias. I love this cartoon that I found. This is a young man going into the library, talking to the librarian. I'm looking for copies of the New York Times. And she responds, that would be in the fiction section. Okay. All right, so just a few statistics. And again, I want us to think about, when we're talking about media bias, I want us to think about not just the bias in the news media in terms of the plethora of talk shows that are out there and news programs and papers like The Times. I want us to think overall in media in terms of the messages that they could keep putting out there about moral relativism, about the acceptance of abortion, about contraception being just like toothpaste and deodorant, that we should just accept that as a way of life, sexual promiscuity. All these messages that are beating down the idea of the dignity of the human person, okay? And all these messages for pro-gay marriage, which actually is part of the whole life issue when you think about it, all right? So just a few studies on this in terms of media bias. The Culture and Media Institute, and this is very interesting, this study just came out, analyzed news programs on the three major broadcast networks, of course, ABC, NBC, and CBS, from February 1st to March 6th to compare the amount of Charlie Sheen coverage versus the Planned Parenthood story. Now, here you have the largest abortion provider in the country. Here you have all these things that are being revealed about Planned Parenthood. And they're all true, right? And now Planned Parenthood doesn't know what to do because they've never been attacked like this before. They're firing people. Then they're saying their people aren't the problem, that it's all a hoax, but they're still firing people. Now they're saying they're going to retrain them. In the few stories that I've seen, they've been very inconsistent, and I don't know who their PR director is, but I'm really glad because they're doing a really bad job, which is good for our side, okay? But they covered Charlie Sheen so much more than this important story, and you would think that if these feminists in the newsrooms, if they really cared about women and they were finding out that there were problems with abortion providers, because they're all about safe, legal, and rare, supposedly, that they would be banging down the doors with the cameras from 60 Minutes and Headline News and MSNBC, but obviously that's not happening, okay? So February 1st through March 6th, they compared Charlie Sheen coverage to Planned Parenthood coverage, and the Culture and Media Institute found, and I know you're going to be shocked, that they devoted 20 times more broadcast coverage to Sheen's issues than to the Planned Parenthood scandal. The March for Life, in the most part, is there's pretty much a news blackout on that event. Now, how in the world, when you have 400,000+ people there, and I know this because I've been covering it now for 5 or 6 years physically down there. I've always covered it, at least on the air, but I've been covering it for EWTM for the past several years. How in the world do you not even mention a gathering of 400,000 people for anything? I don't care if they're going for an Easter egg hunt. 400,000 people is a story just by the numbers in Washington, D.C., in the freezing cold, and it was so cold, I said, I'm going to die here. I'm going to die right here on this pro-life march this year. But I'm going to go straight to heaven because I know it's martyrdom if you're at a pro-life march. At least that's what I'm working on. The bishop will have to talk about to him about that afterwards. But 400,000 plus, and now they're saying this year they think there was more than that, between 400,000 and 500,000. And rarely a mention. Fox News did cover it a little bit. The Washington Post did cover it, but in their local section, and they always do the tricks with the camera angles. They show a very, very tight group of protesters not to take a wide shot and to give you the expansive, massive amounts of people that just keep coming and coming. That is a huge story just in numbers alone, and they don't. And the issue, what has been the most hotly contested issue in terms of health care? Abortion kept coming up over and over again. So here's an opportunity we call in the business one-stop shopping. You've got every single pro-life group on the planet at this march. And you've got congressmen and congresswomen and senators and all these politicians. The media literally just have to walk out the door and stick a microphone if they want to cover this event and get their stories. And the stories and the women and the men of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign are ignored. And these people in the pro-abortion movement are supposed to care about the women. And they ignore their voices. How hypocritical. I'm a little passionate about this, so excuse me. I feel very tied to this podium, but it's really frustrating because I'm Italian and I need to move, so pardon my hands. Last month, The View, that's why we're doing the Catholic View for Women, okay? The View brought on two Planned Parenthood supporters from Congress, absolutely no pro-lifers. Now, okay, I'll give them a little bit of a break because technically it's a talk show, it's not a news show. But you would think that they would at least attempt to cover the other side of the story. And Joy Behar, Who's another woman that I pray for a lot. She keeps sending me to the confessional, though, because I get so angry when I watch her, so I guess that's a good thing. On her show on Headline News, she was taking the same approach to the Planned Parenthood issue, especially the vote in Congress and the House, which, of course, passed the defunding of Planned Parenthood bill, but then it failed in the Senate. But she called those of us who support defunding Planned Parenthood, and primarily she was targeting the Congress people, immoral, unethical, stupid, and evil. That's what we are, immoral, unethical, stupid, and evil. Positive coverage of abortion versus negative coverage of pregnancy centers, doesn't it just drive you crazy? They want to investigate pregnancy centers, but they've got the Gosnells of the world in Philadelphia and the Planned Parenthood, you know, allegedly aiding and abetting sex traffickers, but they want to investigate pregnancy centers in the media. You know, fall all over that. In 2008, survey shows that voters overwhelmingly believe the media wanted liberal candidates from the top on down to win the election. And the voters that they polled said this from 70% to 90%. And these were all different voters. These were independents, Republicans, Democrats. And by and large, they said the media were trying to get the liberals elected. A wide number of other polls and studies going back 40 years show journalists vote for candidates who fall, and you're going to be shocked again, to the left of center. Okay. Going all the way back to 1979, 1980, there was a famous study that was done of the mainstream media executives. It's called the Lichter-Rothman Report, and you can look it up. What they did was they interviewed the leaders of these different major newspapers and chains, and they all found that 90% of those surveyed at that time, this is back in 79, 80, were in favor of abortion. So that was back in the late 70s and 80s. They had that much of an edge in terms of really trying to push the abortion issue. The same study also found that half of the media questioned did not have a religious affiliation. So this is what I'm saying, where we try to put ourselves in their mindset and understand how they're thinking in order to be able to approach them. And I think we can do that with the facts of the issue. Because if you call up a news director at a secular station and start quoting from Humana Vitae or from Scripture, they're not going to know what you're talking about. And you're not going to be able to touch them. We have the facts, okay? All right. Just real quickly before I get into the do's and don'ts, and I'm just going to fly through this, but some statistics on the media in terms of how we're being desensitized in the media bias. Young people use media about 53 hours a week. Adults are not much better at 40 to 43 hours a week. There are a number of reports that have come out in the last 3 to 5 years, and there's a whole huge amount of evidence on media influence, and a lot of it I have in my book. Sexualization of young people came out. The American Psychological Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics has done a number of studies on this, the over-sexualization of women. A study from the Parents Television Council came out in 2009 about women in peril, showing violence against women portrayed on TV as like this new theme. Parents Television Council did another study about Tinseltown targeting tweens and teen girls now. That's a new market for them, okay? 2/3 of all TV programming contains sexual content, all right? And also the violent content on television. All of these things desensitize us, and we have to think about this. That's why we have to offer good alternative programming, which we're trying to do with E.W. Chen, with shows like The Catholic View for Women, and to do productions, and so to use the media to the nth degree to get a positive message out there. Not necessarily even a religious message, because you can reach people with the truth, as Professor George said. Now, I'll quote encyclicals and I'll talk about JP2's Letter to Women and Mulieris Dignitatum all day long. I love those documents. But again, I'm not going to reach the average person, even in the pews with that, if they haven't been catechized. So we have to reach them where they're at and give them the facts. And that's what we can do in the pro-life movement without even going there if we're going to be in the secular arena. If we're in the Christian arena, that's something different. All right. So just to kind of give you a general understanding, I know I'm going really quickly, but I have so much information on this. And I just am so passionate because I've lived and breathed the media since I was 14 years old, as I said. So I know this stuff like the back of my hand. All right. Do's and don'ts. Do gain a basic understanding of how the media operate. My book, Noise, really goes through this, especially in the last chapter. I talk about deadlines, and I talk about understanding that. But more than that, understand the power that is still available to us to get our word out through different mediums, through radio, through TV, through conservative talk, through Christian talk, and even through the secular media. Get an understanding of deadlines, and I have to fly through this because there's so much detail here just even on this one section, which is why I'm doing a whole day presentation down in Columbus on this. So many people don't understand when to call a radio or a TV station. You have to do your homework, and you have to know their deadlines. You know, when I was in TV news, I would tell people, don't call me at 5 minutes to five. I'm either going to be on the air live or going to be in studio anchoring. And so many people called me and would get frustrated if I couldn't talk to them at 5 to 5. It's ridiculous. You have to understand the media and how they operate and understand the general basics of what they need. Get to know your audience. Get to know your audience. What does that mean? Let me give you an example. This Thursday, I was on a secular station in North Carolina to promote The View. EWTM, Priests for Life, my company, we put out press releases about the show. I got a call from a news talk station in Raleigh-Durham, pretty decent-sized market. It was, you know, still, what was it, morning drive? It was about 10:30 in the morning, which is still a pretty high listenership time of day. And so I went online, I found out who the hosts were going to be, talked to the producer, and I said, you know, what do you want to cover? How much time do I have? And he said, we just want to talk about the idea of this alternative program. I said, okay. So I went online and I researched the format. I researched the owner of the station because I know about the ownership and their angles and what they try to do. And this was generally just a news talk station. And so I went on, I read the bios of the hosts who were going to be interviewing me. And I could tell by the last name, I was assuming that they were Catholic, and they were, but that doesn't, we all know, doesn't guarantee anything in this day and age. But I was able to track down the co-host. It was a husband and wife team, and she was a columnist for a local newspaper. And I took the time to read a couple of her columns and got a sense that she was, seemed to be more of a conservative type of a person and seemed very interested in women's issues, but in a positive sense. Not the Nancy Pelosi sense, but more of, let's say, a JP2 new feminism idea, because I really liked her writing. So I knew it wasn't going to be an uncomfortable interview. Had a great 10 minutes with them, and we laughed. And, you know, sometimes it's very important when you're dealing with the secular press just to be kind. Because it's a very high-pressure industry. It's nasty. It's competitive beyond belief. I can tell you stories that would make your toes curl about things that were done to me by other women and men in the business if they would be jealous or if they wanted the lead story and how they would fight for it and switch tapes. I mean, just crazy stuff. And so just being kind to people makes all the difference in the world. And also presenting a loving image, because lots of times we as Christians don't present the love of Christ that Abby was talking about. Sometimes we come off as very angry and judgmental. And look, I'm very passionate about this, and this is something I deal with all the time, because now coming from that background, I know about all the lies. But I try to be very upbeat and you know, not to skirt the truth in any way. But the co-host asked me, he said, so this is a religious show. Is there going to be any laughter on this show? And I said, absolutely. I said, you know, I'm really glad you brought that up, though, because you're right. A lot of people who claim to have the joy of the Lord aren't very joyful. I said, so yeah, we are absolutely excited about being back in the church. We're all reverts. And I said, you know, it's actually going to be a lot of laughter, because if you tune in Friday night for the first night, you're going to laugh just at our old hairstyles in high school. So that itself is worth, you know, tuning into. And so right away, the conversation didn't become confrontational. It became a friendly conversation. It was a really good interview and a plug. Okay, so do your homework. Do your homework. I can't stress this enough in terms of sending releases, sending e-blasts, sending newsletters. When we talk about knowing the media, use everything at your fingertips. And it's not all that expensive. The Christian Newswire, you can go on the Christian Newswire and you can send a press release and you can target your audience and you can send it to a variety of different media outlets, both secular and Christian, very quickly. Weigh each interview carefully, build relationships with the media, build news relationships or relationships with news media to get to know the news directors, the editors, and the people in your newsrooms. Build on contacts with pro-life friends in the secular media. Utilize Christian and conservative talk outlets. You have Catholic radio here. You have a great Protestant station here. I know I've been on the Fish many times doing interviews. Make sure they know who you are and what you're doing, and make yourself available to them on a regular basis. Do provide, and this is huge, and I just had a great example of a problem with this issue, do provide reliable contact information. You need to be available 24/7. Radio stations, most news cycles are on the air 24/7. Okay, I had a guy in a national interview, wasn't there for his interview, and missed, he only had 5 minutes, he could have had 15. He wasn't anywhere to be found. He said, oh, sorry, I was just confused. You think I'm going to call him back? No. I am on the air, you need to be there when your scheduled time slot is, okay? Do provide interview alternatives. If you can't answer the questions, find someone else in the pro-life movement that can. Do be willing to write editorials, blog, and write as much as possible in print and online. Do look for sidebar story opportunities. If you see a story coming up about stem cell research, maybe there's a story, as Dr. Rossetti was saying yesterday, a person that you know who has had some success with adult stem cell research. Think of alternative story ideas that tie in with that topic to keep the pro-life issues active. Do learn to be proactive instead of reactive. Don't always react to the negative, but put positive pro-life stories and just keep submitting them. Just keep sending them to the assignment editors, to the news editors. Just keep putting it out there again and again. Okay? I'm really flying through this. I'm really sorry, but I know we're short of time. So look for sidebar stories, be proactive, and beware of the open microphone. What does that mean? That means that you do not say anything that you wouldn't say on the air. If there is a reporter in your presence, especially secular reporter, not so much if obviously with your with the Catholic station, it's not going to be a 60-minute situation or a Protestant station. But if you are in the room with a secular journalist, even if the microphone that you were into which you were talking is turned off, if that camera is still rolling, they are getting natural sound from the room. Okay, so they're recording that B-roll, and that B-roll has to have natural sound to make all the audio fit with the pictures. And I explain this in my book. As you do not say anything. You wouldn't say in front of that person on camera until that person is in the truck, out the door, down the driveway, and gone. And never, ever, ever go off the record. And we'll talk about that in a second, too, if I have time. All right, don't. Don't lose your cool. Don't get angry. Because it's just what they want, because then they can put you on the air and make you look very negative. So be nice, okay? Don't repeat the negatives. I hear this all the time, a lot in the pro-life movement, when someone will come up to them to interview them. Why are you against, you know, a woman's right to choose? Or why are you against choice? Think about how you would respond to that. My response would be, actually, we offer real choice in the pro-life movement. And then, ba-boom, 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 state your points. Don't repeat the negative. Okay? Because what you're doing is you're just adding to that message over and over again, desensitization, that we're against choice when just the opposite is true. Don't ignore requests for interviews. Call the people back. All right? Don't expect the media to be on our side. In reality, if they were doing their jobs, they're not supposed to be on anybody's side. Okay? But obviously that's not reality. But just don't expect them to be on our side. Don't be afraid to ask questions ahead of time. Now, you can't expect a list of questions. You're not going to do that. But you can do, for example, what I did and call the producer and say, okay, what are you looking for? What kind of an angle are we taking with this story? Nothing wrong with that. You need to know, in order to do that interview, what to be prepared for. And you may not be the right person for the interview, okay? Don't feel pressure to say yes to every interview. Maybe it's not for you, but have a list of experts in the pro-life movement that may be the right person for that interview, okay? All right, real quickly, tips for being tops. I love alliteration on TV. Wear makeup. If you're going to be on television, you need to have your makeup done. And for guys, I'm talking, I don't expect you to do the mascara and the eyeliner routine. I'm not saying that. But for heaven's sakes, especially if you have a receding hairline, get some pancake makeup in a neutral color, okay, and make yourself look presentable. Because I guarantee you, if you have a shiny forehead, everybody's going to be looking at your forehead and not listening to what you're saying, okay? It's just a physical thing. Avoid all white because it glows too much on camera. All black, you look like you're in mourning. Keep it simple. All right. When you're doing a television interview as opposed to a live talk back in studio, when you're with the reporter one-on-one, you look at the reporter, not at the camera, because you want it to be conversational. Okay. If you're doing a live interview, make sure you can hear clearly. What they'll give you if you go into a studio, and many of you are doing this, and you're going to be doing it more and more because of all the different opportunities that come up and with the election coming up next year. If you're in the newsroom and you're doing what we call a live talkback, or even if you're out in the field and you're there with the cameraman and they're shooting it back to the studio doing a live interview with you on location, they will give you an earpiece, and it's called IFB, and it stands for interrupted feedback. And so you'll hear cues in your ear, you'll hear the anchor person, or you'll hear the director and the producer talk to you before the interview. If you cannot hear it, tell them to get you a different piece of equipment, because it's no good to do an interview if you can't hear properly. It's just not going to work. Okay? And again, remember, beware the open mic. I tell people in my media training sessions, never, ever, ever go off the record. Unless you have a very, very good established relationship with someone. But I still wouldn't advise it, because especially if it's someone in the secular media, they are going to be under increasing pressure to get a scoop or to get something, especially in terms of how antagonistic they are to pro-lifers and the whole pro-life message. So say nothing on the microphone, okay? Only things that you would say on the mic that you would say. You don't want to say anything else outside of what you would say on the air, okay? Have your message, state it clearly, and beware of the open mic, all right? On radio, this is getting to be a real problem. I know that cell phones are very convenient, but sometimes it can make for very bad radio. Even with the high technology we have in cell phones, I always tell people to have a backup landline. I'm almost making it a must that if you don't have a landline, you can't come on my show, because I can't handle, I'm on a national radio show, I don't want to hear crackling, I don't want to hear cutting out, I don't want to have a signal to drop, which can happen. And so many people do this. They use their cell phones, and it sounds horrible. Avoid speaker phones. You sound like you're in a tunnel. Get into a quiet area. And for heaven's sakes, if you're doing the interview at home, and this has happened to me time and time again, let the dog outside. I've had people on the air with me. The dog has been barking, and you don't concentrate on that person's message. These are little things that's going to help you look like really good, solid experts in your field. Okay? Stay put during an interview. Don't walk around. Stay put. Concentrate. Listen to the questions. And again, I can't say this enough, but beware the open mic. Now, I know I've flown through this fairly quickly, and I'll open it up for questions if we have time. We're probably almost out of time. But I think it's really important for you to take what I'm saying seriously. These may sound like little things, but I have been doing this now. Actually, I graduated college in 1981, so I've been doing this, for almost 30 years. It's really important, and these things work. These little things can make all the difference. But if we are going to motivate people to get educated, to be active, and to really engage the culture, we can't ignore these media opportunities. We just simply cannot. And we have to be willing to make an effort to meet with news directors, to meet with an editorial board of a newspaper, to give them story ideas, to single out the people in the newsroom, if you have a contact in the newsroom, to work with them, to know who the assignment editor is, to know who the producers are of the major shows. What do you think the other side is doing? They're talking to the media all the time. They're very much in cahoots, unfortunately, and we have to get back out there and engage not just on the Fox News of the world, which still needs a lot of education as far as I'm concerned in terms of the life issues, because even though Hannity and O'Reilly are okay on some of these issues, it's still not there. They still don't get it. They're more friendly than the others, but they still don't get the whole picture. We have to be consistent. We have to be engaging. We have great experts. Look at the people that have been speaking here this weekend. Dr. Rossetti was fabulous. I kept thinking, I gotta get this guy on my show. Be able to get your message out there clearly, succinctly, and don't be afraid of the media. Mother Teresa said, God doesn't expect us to be successful, only faithful. Maybe it'll take you 3 times, 4 times, 5 times, 10 times to get on the air. Keep trying. The squeaky wheel does get the grease. Keep trying. And if you're not successful, that's okay, but you have to try. We're all going to be held, the Catholic Church teaches this, we're all going to be held responsible, not just for our own actions in terms of generally with our life, but we are going to be held responsible for how we have used the media. Have we used them well? Have we not taken advantage of it? And those of you who are pro-life leaders need to start taking advantage of the secular press as well as the Christian and conservative talk. Now, I know I've flown through this. I apologize. It's a lot to go through in 45 minutes. But I do training sessions for pro-life groups all over the country. I'd be happy to come back to Cleveland and do one for you. But again, thank you, and keep trying, and keep getting the word out. Amen? So anybody, do we have time for one question? Okay, one question. Yes.
I have young children, and the media influence in their life is very large. We don't want to ignore that it exists, but we also want to be able to use it positively. I try to inform my kids on how to have a filter. Do you have any recommendations to parents on media, and especially as I want them to be able to use that media to get
right.
Pro-life positive things out. But
well, and also they have to learn how to use the media. You can't sequester them 24/7, although if I had children, my husband and I never had children, I think I'd have them all in convents and seminaries, because what I know in my life and what I've seen, you parents amaze me. You're just so incredible, such incredible people. But in my book, Noise, I have a whole pattern and a whole plan for parents. The best thing to do is to set the media guidelines. American Academy of Pediatrics says children 2 and under, no TV at all. Nothing. Nothing. And 3 hours a day for older children. That's it. Set the guidelines. Stick to them. Turn the TV off after certain hours. Get your kids involved, though, in terms of watching good media, even if it's not the Catholic media or Protestant media, and to see things that put out a positive message about family or about, you know, something good in the culture and society. But set guidelines and stick to them, and don't be afraid to be a parent. It drives me crazy when I go around. I have one woman stand up to me and say, how do I say no? Now, I was born in New Jersey. I was raised in Detroit. My mother still talks like she's from Jersey. She calls me up, leaves me a message. I still get nervous. I did something. What did I do? I forgot. You know, Teresa, it's your mother. Call me. I have to talk to you about something. My mother didn't even have to ever raise a hand to us because we knew. She did tell me, if I start hitting you, I'm never going to stop. I got caught dating a guy I wasn't supposed to and everything. But, you know, I always say, let me put my mother Rose from Jersey on speed dial. You want to know how to say no? I'm your mother. That's why. You live in this house? You want to move out? Fine. Who's going to make your gravy like I make gravy? You move out of this house, you're not going to get anything. You're here, you're under my roof. Don't be afraid to be a parent. Thank you. And everything is in the book. Sorry, I know I went through stuff really fast, but there's so much information. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you.
Oh, I just flew through it. We're so gifted to have Teresa here with us today. Thank you so much, Teresa. Really enjoyed